Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele podcast. We are talking with my good buddy, Glenn Kirshner, who is the host of Justice Matters with Glenn Kirshner and MSNBC legal analyst and professor extraordinaire at George Washington University. I mean, George Washington, right?
Or GW. George
Washington, yeah. Right. So I before we went to break, I mentioned Supreme Court, which... let's say this week, they didn't disappoint, that's for sure. They brought out passions on all sides with their rulings. Let's start with the affirmative action case. You had some very strong words on that case regarding the impact that it has beyond just the sheer idea of affirmative action. The lack of historical appreciation of the journey of African Americans and people of color in this country, the reason, the rationale behind carving out this space for those folks who have been historically, economically, politically, and otherwise disenfranchised. Share with us a little bit of your thinking on this decision that gutted and ostensibly eliminates affirmative action in the academic setting. I think sets up eliminating affirmative action in the business sector as well.
Yeah, so the Supreme Court has basically cemented the sort of systemic racism and disadvantage that we all know has been in existence since, you know, the nation was born in slavery and built on the backs of slaves. It kind of goes without saying that if you have a population that you enslave, that you deny all of the not only constitutional rights, but human rights.
Right.
You deny them the right to own anything, property or anything else. You deny people the right to accumulate wealth. So therefore, by extension, you deny them the opportunity to make their children's lives better moving forward. And that wasn't so long ago. As I said, hell, everything was separate but equal until 1954. And we all know it wasn't equal at that point either. But this is our recent history. You have deprived people of equal opportunity. Mm-hmm. And now the Supreme Court has cemented that circumstance. And they are saying it doesn't matter. We will forever deprive you of the opportunity to just catch up. What we're going to do is we're going to take other populations that didn't have any of those hardships or deprivations or abuses or adversities in their history. And we're going to say you have to compete against all of them with no recognition of the deprivations that we made sure to inflict upon you for the generations. How in the F is that fair, decent, equal protection? How is it constitutional? I mean, it was an outcome-oriented opinion, decision, right, that the Supreme Court was hell-bent on getting to, and I'll be damned if they didn't get there.
What do you make of the high court's use of the first form of affirmative action in the 14th Amendment to undo affirmative action? I mean, I can get into the political side and the my problem that I've been battling inside the GOP since I first joined the party in the 1970s, with helping them understand that we have been always been the architect and the authors of affirmative action legislation in this country. We have. And, you know, from 40 acres and a mule in the post-Reconstruction era, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, civil rights legislation in the 1960s, the GOP has always kind of been in that space. In fact, modern day affirmative action was the created by Art Fletcher, you know, one of the secretaries for Richard Nixon in the Department of Commerce back in the late 1960s. He's considered the father, Black African-American Republican, the father of modern day affirmative action. And yet the party found itself tearing at it, using white grievance as the basis, you know, reverse discrimination. I don't know what kind of bullshit that is, but I don't know how you have reverse discrimination against the majority that owns the economic, political, and educational systems in this country. Okay, I'll play. But then to use the 14th Amendment and for Roberts and his court to distort that, to me, I can't rationally come around on that. Maybe you can help us see the legal nexus there.
No, I can't explain the inexplicable. And I used to argue that to my juries all the time, because in every case I tried, there were a couple of inexplicable facts and circumstances. And I would say, you know, folks, listen, if I had to, as a prosecutor, explain the inexplicable to your satisfaction, nobody'd ever be held accountable for any of their crimes, right? So, what the Supreme Court has done is they take the 14th Amendment, they turn it on its head, and they take something that was designed to deal with inequality, and they use it to cement the very inequality it was designed to alleviate.
Yes.
That is what the Supreme Court has done. And Michael, here's the thing, because there's no oversight, because there's no code of ethics, because they are, and I don't say this lightly, and it makes my heart ache, they are a conflicted, compromised, and corrupt Supreme Court. Many of the justices.
Yeah.
And they lied to us during their confirmation hearings. They fell all over themselves saying how much they respect settled precedent, stare decisis. It's been decided and affirmed several times over. It's worthy of respect. What were they saying to us? They were saying most directly, if you confirm me, Roe versus Wade has nothing to worry about from me. And I think by extension, you could apply that to affirmative action and LGBTQ rights and other areas where there was some precedent on the books for a very long time, trying to move our society forward, particularly when you apply evolving societal norms as is part of constitutional interpretation. They lied to us, and they have not been held accountable for their lies. And they expose their own lies because they're not as smart as they think they are. When Alito writes something like, Roe was egregiously wrongly decided from the moment it was handed down. Well, thank you, Alito, because you just put your own lie to your confirmation testimony because you said the exact opposite. But here's where we go back to the rule of law, Michael. If we are unwilling to hold them accountable for lying under oath during their Senate confirmation hearings each time they did it, it was a 5-year offense under 18 USC 1001. If we're unwilling, then we get precisely what we just got from the Supreme Court, revoking or cutting back on the rights of all sorts of people and populations, whether it's women, whether it's African-Americans, people of color, whether it's the LGBTQ community. That's what we get because we refuse to hold the ruling class criminals accountable.
How do you, I have a sense I know where you're going to go on this one. The affirmative action case was just mind-numbingly painful and stupid and disregarded, as you aptly put out, precedent beyond precedent. But then you get to the next case, which is the website case, where you have a plaintiff who says, I may want to at some point in the future. I'm not sure when, possibly, but then again, I could change my mind. But I don't know. I really do think I'm considering creating, building a website for wedding planners to come. But if I do that in the future, maybe, possibly, I'm not sure yet, I don't want to have to build a website for a gay couple. So Supreme Court, I need you to tell me I don't have to do that if I decide at some point in the future, possibly, but I'm not sure yet because I haven't built the website yet. So no one's been harmed, but I could be harmed in the future. So could you, can you help a sister out?
Yeah, let's talk about explaining the inexplicable. And apparently the person that she named as Stuart, who was the kind of the guy who kind of sort of might want a website, doesn't exist. He's like, I didn't do any of that.
Well, so not only that, he's married.
Yeah.
He's not gay. He's got kids. Oh, and here's the kicker. Go ahead. You say it. You go ahead.
He's a website developer. Yeah, so there is no case or controversy as is required in the Constitution if the judiciary even has the authority to wade in to this. But here is what this decision boils down to for me. This is the Supreme Court saying, if you cloak your intolerance, your prejudice, and your hatred of others in either your religion or your right to artistic expression, you can discriminate against whoever you damn well please.
That's so well. I'm going to pull that clip for y'all, folks, because that just summed up. That is it right there. You have nailed exactly not just the intent, but the outcome right there.
And you know what, though, Michael? We may not be at the end. I'm happy to talk with you all day long, but the silver lining behind this enormous black stinking cloud of the Supreme Court, at least six of the justices, is that if you think we were pissed in November 2020, wait until November 2024, because I will never get over that women's constitutional privacy rights have been revoked.
Yeah.
That now, over their objection and absent their consent, a handful of Supreme Court justices said, we will make your reproductive decisions for you. Thank you very much. If that doesn't drive people to the polls, if this doesn't drive people of color and everybody who gives a rat's ass about fairness for everybody to the polls, if it doesn't drive our LGBTQ community and everybody who cares about them to the polls, come on now. You ain't seen nothing yet in November 2020. I absolutely believe that. That is the silver lining.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And it was interesting to hear the president, I think, appropriately state out of the gate in his conversation with Nicole Wallace that, you know, tinkering with the number of justices on the Supreme Court will have a far worse political outcome, could create more harm than good. But I do think that now the court has fairly gravitated attention towards it, as reflected by sinking from some 75% of approval by the American people to, I think on a good day now, 32%. Mm-hmm. I've seen as low as 27% of the American people approving of this court, which in the past, people looked at as being fair, as looked at as that the ultimate check and balance in our system rested there. When you have a court that is so clear in its lack of ethics or in even a desire to resolve the ethical questions that have been borne out by the behavior of certain justices. And then, of course, as you pointed out, saying in their confirmation hearings that stare decisis, precedent matters. We may or may not agree with the politics of it. That's not our job. Our job is to respect what our brethren and sisters of the courts in the past have decided, to say, the hell with that, bitch. We got this now. What do you see as the future of the court? How does it fix itself? If the ballot box certainly will be away, so electing folks who have a different view of the court and the role it should play is one outcome. But do you think the court has it in itself to fix itself here? Because I know Roberts well enough to know that's a desire, but the outcome just hasn't worked out that to meet that desire, in my view.
Yeah, I don't think the court is capable of fixing itself. Listen, anytime you let an organization fix itself, address its own abuses, I think of police departments that run roughshod and are right. asked to police themselves. How well does that typically turn out? And we don't let, you know, police departments that we suspect of, you know, being involved in systemic racism and civil rights abuses, we try to insert the Department of Justice in there for pattern or practice investigations, and they police the police departments that need that sort of oversight. Organizations have a very hard time policing themselves, and I don't think the Supreme Court has any interest or inclination to police itself. They like being above it all and untouchable. I am a proponent of the 13 justices for a couple of reasons. First of all, over the years, we have increased the number of federal court sure. judges to accommodate the explosion in caseloads. And federal judges are still horrifically overworked. They can barely keep their heads above water given the caseloads that they are drowning in. Well, you know what? The same could be said of the Supreme Court. First of all, they only take a fraction of cases that are petitioned for review, in part, I believe, because they don't have the bandwidth to take all of the righteous cases that probably should be given a look by the Supreme Court. But we have 13 federal jurisdictions. We've expanded to 13 jurisdictions. It's supposed to be one judge with some supervisory responsibilities over those 13 jurisdictions. But look at the list. Some of the judges have to double up, do double duty. And I also, you know, if you look at the history of our nation, we have had as few as 5 Supreme Court justices. Yeah. We have had as many as 10 Supreme Court justices. 9 is not a magic number. I think there is every reason, if only to keep up with the increase in population and caseloads, to increase the number of justices, exactly as we have done for federal court judges below the Supreme Court. So, and to, I think, try to address the abuses of the Trump-McConnell era.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.